If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Welcome to the Wind Trust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Musion sitting in for Steve Bertrand. I'm the host of the Big Payoff podcast, and you can tweet to me today at Big Payoff Radio. And as always on Mondays, we start out with great tech business Chicago news. And we have the guys from Chicago Inno, editor Jim Dahlke and GM Will Flanagan in the studio for not just one, but two segments, you guys.
Yeah,
you
must be kept fooling Steve. Don't tell him.
No, it's all good. But so what I want to know, so you two walk in, who's the boss?
Where's the boss?
Really, is that like a thing? Like
it's a lowercase b, but yeah, he's definitely the boss.
It's a lowercase b, yeah, just on the mug only. Uh-huh. World's best boss.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you guys get along?
Yeah, I would say so. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because you do on the air, but you know, who knows?
Oh, yeah. We could be totally serious.
Yeah, I mean, we try to keep it professional on the mic, but as soon as we step out of the studio.
We're definitely not good enough to fake our enjoyments of one another.
Okay, good, because you seem pretty authentic.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get to it. We've got a lot to cover. So the first thing, look, everyone is talking about the fact that there's this whole fake news crisis going on our Facebook feeds and in Google, where stuff coming across the transom sounds like real news, but we know it's not. And there's even been discussion about to what extent did that have an influence on voters. And it sounds like some U of I, very creative young adults, might have a solution.
Yeah, some of the most popular stories this election cycle, based on a study that BuzzFeed did recently, were actual fake stories. So fake stories definitely were in everybody's timeline. Everybody saw them. And a team of U of I students combined with some other university students at the University of Princeton were at a hackathon, and they created Fib, which is basically a way to detect stories on a Facebook timeline that are fake. They use artificial intelligence to verify the sources behind a post to know if a story is fake or factually accurate or inaccurate, and they will post a little tag on a story.
Tell us what a hackathon is. I think that term gets thrown around a lot, but what's a hackathon?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a gathering of technologists, people who are passionate about building, usually developers, programmers, and you're given 36 hours, 48 hours to solve a problem. So this was something that was popular at the time, right?
Yeah,
fake
sure.
news. And this team said, let's identify that problem and let's fix it. So they came up with this Chrome extension. And to me, like, the big story here isn't so much the solution, because a Chrome extension is kind of a clunky way to address this. But to me, it's the fact that a very real solution that does address this is made in 36 hours, because right now a lot of the pushback is Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is, you know, we're working on it, right. We're looking at it, we have a couple things in the works. And to me, it's like the fake news thing, like, come
right.
on, man,
we
like,
gotta solve
let's
that.
Fix this. And the fact that a solution, not the solution, what was created in 36 hours, tells me that there needs to be more urgency from the major players. We need Twitter, Facebook to really say, this is now going to the top of our priority list, and we're going to have it addressed by the end of the holidays.
So they came up with this Fib. Now what happens? So it's out there. Does it get put in use? Is it a real thing now?
We'll see. It sounds like this may have just been a part of the hackathon, like sort of a product that came out of that. Facebook did it. Zuckerberg did a blog post just the other day that said that they're basically kind of building an in-house version of what these students at the hackathon did. But really, it's an example of showing you this technology can be made. It can be made fast.
Amazing.
Facebook, what are you waiting for? Facebook, you know, for its part, you know, has a lot of things to juggle, right? They are still, you know, a champion of free speech, and they want this to be a platform for people to be able to post their thoughts and opinions. But what seems to be a very easy solution is a tag that says this is not verified.
Yeah, and there are two big pieces to the fake news problem. One are these platforms that are creating fake news, that they know what you're doing. And that's the problem you gotta really dive in on. You gotta say, all right, let's flag these and make sure that this isn't getting lost in the feed. The other problem is harder to solve, which is in New York Times had a great example of kind of unpacking the viralness of a tweet.
Exactly.
A citizen sent out a tweet. He had 40 followers at the time. Next thing you know, this was shared over 360,000 times on Facebook. And that's one of those things where the fact that we're talking about it to me is a step in the right direction, that all of a sudden we care about fake news. But that's the problem that's going to be really hard to solve, is the average guy just...
Yeah, and let's give a shout out to U of I, you guys. I mean, I know they were up against big brands like Princeton, et cetera, and all of that. But, you know, U of I is becoming known for their engineering program around the world. So shout out to those guys.
Totally.
Let's talk about Divvy Bikes and what sounds like a new, very cool startup called Divvy Dose. And as I said before we got on the air, I have a million questions about this. So let's start with what it is and why it's cool.
Yes, Divvy Dose is a startup in Illinois, and they are essentially a pharmacy delivery startup. So they will work with your insurance, basically whatever medication you need, and they will deliver it to your house. And the delivery aspect is one part of kind of what they're doing. The other part is about labeling and making sure you're taking the right dosage at the right time at the right day. This is kind of a service for people who have 5, 6, 10, 12 medicines that they're taking every day. So this is going to help organize everything you're taking, deliver it to your door every month. Everything is labeled in individual packs, and it gives you all the information you need.
And is there qualifications on the part of the person delivering it? Like, do they have to have a medical degree of some kind?
So the startup is founded by a physician, and it is shipped via UPS. So it's just going through the mail.
Yeah, that to me is the encouraging side, that it was started by a physician who saw the problem and not like an entrepreneur who just said, oh, do you know what would be cool? An Uber startup for medicine.
Right.
So it is being kind of reverse engineered from, is this legal? Will this work from not just the end user perspective, but, you know, can this be, will this match your healthcare coverage, and will this all be legit? And to me, one of the interesting things about Divvy Dose is that right now the on-demand space was really, really hot, and now it's starting to slow down. Investment is really slowing in this year. But to me, what's interesting about Divvy Dose is that unlike these other verticals and categories where the concern is all of a sudden a big player is going to come in and say, actually, now I do this. The biggest players in this industry, which would be CVS or Walgreens, aren't necessarily going to get into it because they need that foot traffic in their stores.
I can't wait to see what happens. I think there's a lot of questions, but it's awesome. But we're going to keep you guys on, as we always do. We're going to be talking a little bit about one of my favorite companies. I know everybody's is Context Media. We'll be talking about that when we get back. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muchin sitting in for Steve Bertrand. And we're back with the Chicago Inno guys, who get two segments because there's so much to talk about. Will Flanagan, the GM, and editor Jim Dahlke. We've already established that Will is like the boss.
Yeah. He's
kind of in charge. But, you know, you do well on the air. No one would know.
Cool.
Okay. So let's get started. I want to talk about one of our favorite companies in Chicago, because they're sort of define doing well and doing good, and they're just such good people. So let's talk about what's going on at Context Media, because it sounds like there was a pretty big deal going on there.
Yeah, Context Media, one of the fastest growing tech companies in Chicago. They do digital exam room boards and waiting room boards. It's digital content. So basically, rather than watching the news while you're in your doctor's waiting room, you get like health related information. They do exam room wall boards that give doctors the ability to give you more specific in-depth information on your specific ailment. So really cool stuff. They just acquired a competitor, actually a larger competitor, Accent Health, a company that's been around for about 5 years more than they have, or more than that. So it's a really interesting now that this makes Context Media the largest producer of health-related in-office content. They're going to be in 70% of all doctors' offices by 2020.
Crazy.
Yeah, what's really cool about Context Media is over the past month, I've been kind of traveling around to other cities in the Midwest that have emerging tech hubs. I've been in Milwaukee, Madison, Minneapolis, and they've all kind of said the same thing. Like, okay, how do we get to Chicago? Do you know what we're missing? We're just missing that Groupon moment. We're missing that startup that blew up and created a big exit that everyone was paying attention. And my response was, like, don't worry about your Groupon moment, go for the context media moment. They are building it the absolute right way. This is a bootstrap business, which means they haven't raised any outside funding. Like you kind of referenced earlier, they're great people, and that's a real thing. You can, a lot of companies kind of advertise their culture. If you walk through your office, you feel it. Everybody there loves what they're doing. They're also building a great product. If you've been in an exam room and you were handed a pamphlet or a brochure, that's not effective. We all use our phones. We all know how to engage with digital content. We need to be engaging with the most important kind of digital content, which is how it relates to our health. So that, to me, is context media is kind of the perfect example of what we're building here.
I think that the genius of it is, if you want to get people to pay attention to information, as we know, you got to give it to them when, at the moment that they're the most open to it and want it the most. So not only do they have the distribution into the rooms themselves, but it's like at that, they own that moment. That's, to me, the genius of it.
Totally. They're talking the language that needs to be talked, right? I mean, I was walking around this weekend, and I saw three baby strollers with the iPhone kind of propped against. Like, we're all going to be digital natives. This is the language. We need our health to be communicated through that platform. And they're smart enough, if all of a sudden VR or augmented reality becomes the dominant way of communicating, they're going to be doing that as well. When it comes to communicating how to take care of yourself, it needs to be done in this digital environment.
And these guys are making their own hardware, too. They're not just using iPads and putting them in doctor's offices or using the in-office TVs. Like, they're making their own stuff, so they control the whole process from beginning to end. Awesome. Really cool. And another one quick part about that I love about this acquisition, Accent Health tried to acquire Context Media back 5 years ago. Context Media said no. Now they're the acquirers later.
That's cool. An awesome story.
Yeah.
A little thumb wrestling there. Yeah. I love it. Okay, so Jim, you also reported on a great startup story this week that I love, because it's another one of those stories where somebody was trying to solve a personal problem and turned it into a really cool business.
Yeah, Label Insight is another really fast-growing Chicago startup, and they built a company based off of their father, who was sick. He needed a very, very strict diet. So what they would do is they would go to the grocery store and find all of the items on the shelf that they could actually buy that had the ingredients that could fit with his diet. So they would have spreadsheets and all kinds of data they were acquiring by hand, basically, and they turned that into a company. They were basically a Google search for food product data. This did not exist, believe it or not. Which, you could not get this.
That's how you know something's a good business, when you hear about it and you're like, really? Nobody did that before?
Totally. And you can also tell it's a really good business idea when you're a startup. You kind of claw your way to your first big deal by working, you know, here's a little customer, here's a client. I put together this case study so I can then sell a medium-sized business and then a big business. These guys' first customers were the FDA, like the top top. So that's when you know you have a really good idea, when your first client is who you would want to build to in 5, 10, 15
Can you
years.
Imagine that conversation where you're, you know, looking at customers trying to figure out what to do to get your business off the ground? You're like, hey, it's the FDA on the phone.
Yeah, they signed a 5-year multi-million dollar deal right off the bat, and they've been kind of building from there, signing new clients. And again, like going from Context Media to Label Insight, it's a great Chicago tech story, pragmatic tech solving real problems. I love covering these guys.
Well, Will, the boss, and Jim, his lackey editor. That's so
uppercase
bad.
L.
Uppercase.
Uppercase, lowercase
like,
boss.
You know what, Jim? I've just given you a promotion. I feel like was wrong.
We're going to run that up the chain.
Thank you so much for coming in. It's always great to have you on Mondays.
Thank you so much.
After this break, we're going to be back talking to Randy Schaefer, who does social media for Chicago Tribune, and she's going to tell us why the internet hates Black Friday. Whew, can't wait to hear about that. So we'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Suzanne Muschen, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. And look, we've been talking all about business, about tech, and now we're going to turn to social media. We have Randy Schaefer, who is Chicago Tribune's social media guru. And I want to talk a little bit about everybody's, I think it's becoming this day that people have so many strong feelings about, which is Black Friday. I mean, I know that there's a whole set of movements out there. Last year it was REI trying to get people to opt outdoors. What's happening, and why are people so upset about Black Friday?
Well, let me say, you have strong feelings about Black Friday, and you definitely are not alone. The internet also collectively has strong feelings about Black Friday. And as the years go on, the internet's feelings about Black Friday seem to be getting worse and worse and worse. Mashable actually ran a, they ran a little bit of a test to see how people feel about Black Friday on social media. And last year's Black Friday posts were laced with anger, sadness, fear, and despair. So definitely not really something you want to kick off your holidays with. But it seems that social media has really lately given shoppers a place to vent about how they really and truly feel about waking up at 3 a.m. to get that discounted big screen TV.
And is that what they're angry about? I mean, what's the anger about?
The anger is about long lines and sales maybe not being as good as they should be, and even overworked workers are taking to Black Friday to maybe complain about that 6 p.m. Thanksgiving wake-up call that they have to make in order to get in and get going at midnight, 1 in the morning now.
And then I feel like on social media what we see the next day are all these horrible video clips of people pushing and shoving. It's like it brings out the worst.
Right. And maybe this year, who knows, we can see those going on live.
Oh, right. I forgot about it. Will this be the first year that could happen?
Yeah, this could be the first year. We've had Periscope in the past, Meerkat, but Facebook Live, I think this will be the first year it's mainstream enough that we'll be seeing all of these Black Friday going live.
Oh, it's awful. Okay, let's turn to yet another hashtag that seems to be trending after the weekend, which is the Boycott Hamilton hashtag. So let's give a little bit of background on what led to this, and then clearly there's been a lot of response to it.
Absolutely. In case you haven't heard, Vice President-elect Mike Pence attended a screening of Hamilton and was he received what he called a free lecture by the cast of Hamilton, and the internet reacted by either praising the cast for their comments toward Pence or by urging Twitter users to hashtag boycott Hamilton, which actually might take a little bit considering the show's sold out until September of next year.
But that's the responses that I loved, at least in my feed, were people on Facebook saying, "You're boycotting? Awesome. I'd love your tickets."
Absolutely. So this is kind of, everyone has weighed in on whether they're pro-boycotting Hamilton, against boycotting Hamilton. The ACLU has even weighed in with their thoughts about it. People are getting frustrated about how it's detracting from the real issues about Trump and his lawsuits and Trump's cabinet appointments. But no matter how you look at it, it is definitely an interesting case study in how we turn to Twitter right away to voice our opinion on current events.
Right, and we now have a president-elect who is embracing that forum.
Yes, definitely.
Right, for better or worse. But I agree. I heard somebody on over the weekend who was saying he was President-elect Trump was clearly smart enough to go in this direction to avoid the conversation that could have been taking place about his lawsuit.
Right, right. And that's, a lot of people have noticed that and have called places out about, this isn't what we should be talking about. We should be talking about this lawsuit, but until there's a hashtag for that, I guess.
Exactly. So now, as we're talking about social media, there was a great article this weekend that pushed my thinking for sure, that suggested that all of this attention we're paying to social media could actually be bad for our career.
Absolutely, and that's definitely a point of an argument. My career would be nothing without social media, so I have to politely object, but this story ran November 19th in the New York Times, and it was a column about a millennial computer scientist who writes books and runs a blog. And demographically speaking, he should be a heavy social media user, but that's not the case. He's never had a social media account. And he argues that, you know, despite his limited experience with social media, that social media could hurt your career. And it provides an interesting point that the market rewards things that are rare and valuable, and being able to use social media is neither. And so I guess it is kind of a point that social media is not for everybody. And
he was also talking about the fact that it creates distraction.
Right.
Right. And look, your job is social media.
Right.
So I think we can put you in a separate category,
a little
exemption
Randy. Box.
You get the exemption box. But for the rest of us, to the extent that you're spending time during the day, even if it's just mind share, thinking about whether or not you should go on, whether or not it's tweetable, that takes up, I mean, I'm telling you, before I went into the studio today and I was looking through all of the guests, I found myself going, oh, maybe I should tweet. Really?
Absolutely.
It's addictive.
It is a very fine line. And while it is great to maybe browse trending topics, check out the boycott Hamilton hashtag on your commute to work, it is really easy to get distracted while you're at work and have things to do. And hey, pulling up Facebook just to see what's going on for 5 minutes can turn into 40 minutes of what am I watching on Facebook Live right now?
Exactly. And to your point about the marketplace, unless you're one of those rare, I mean, one in 10 million social media celebrities who actually ends up breaking out and creating a whole very lucrative career.
Right.
For the average person, their social media activity really isn't translating into anything rewardable or tangible.
Right, absolutely. And again, it does very much depend on your career choice, but that can be the case in many instances. So I think it's a very delicate reminder that social media isn't for everybody, although if it is for you, then by all means, don't let one person without a Twitter's experience deter you from doing what you love.
Awesome. Let's just end on a quick social media commentary about the echo chambers that are being created. So that's a term. Break it down. What is an echo chamber?
An echo chamber is, I guess, Facebook and many social media sites use algorithm to populate a user's feed with content they think that user would like. If you're going to open your Facebook and you hate everything that's on it, you're never going to open Facebook again, which is bad for Facebook. So Facebook uses algorithms to populate feeds with news that users want to read, but that kind of inadvertently creates these echo chambers where a social media user's predetermined viewpoints and opinions aren't challenged. And this has kind of led to some contention during the election where conservative-leaning folks had their entire feeds filled with conservative bias pieces,
right,
and liberal-leaning folks had their feeds filled with liberal-leaning pieces. And so many are calling on Facebook to address and fix the problem, but in the meantime, it serves as a really good reminder to go directly to a news source to get your news and to maybe read news and opinion pieces that you might not necessarily agree with, because even if you don't agree with them, they can definitely challenge your viewpoints and expand your horizons a little
bit. It also really creates this bubble because you can get lulled into this perception that, quote, everyone is thinking the way that you think.
Absolutely.
But it's really not the truth. It's just the truth according to the Facebook algorithm.
Absolutely. And that's why so many people were surprised when Donald Trump won the election, is they had their Facebook bubbles that convinced them that HiveMind, everyone on their feeds had the exact same opinion they did, and therefore there must not be another opinion out there.
Yeah, I've really tried to change my behavior since the election because it's very easy to put something out there and just expect that it's going to get a lot of likes until you start thinking about, well, right, because your feed shares your point of view.
Absolutely.
Randy Schaefer, Chicago Tribune Social Media, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to be back after this break talking about an incredible new Kickstarter campaign that you're going to want to hear about. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for my friend Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter at Big Payoff Radio, and I'm the host of the Big Payoff Podcast. We have another dynamic duo in the studio. We earlier had the Chicago Inno guys. I've got another, duo, which is awesome because they're going to tell us about their project, which is now part of a Kickstarter campaign that I've actually been following. I mean, no one needed to tell me before we got you into the room. So here in the room, we have Zach D'Amato and Nick Wesley, who are with Urban Rivers. And first I have to establish, so who reports to who? Who's the boss right here?
We have a joint trust between all the employees. Yeah.
Is that really true?
Yeah.
It's like a structural anarchy.
Uh-huh. Nice. I just feel like, millennials tend to think no one's the boss, but ultimately someone's the boss.
We all have our traits of organization, and we all kind of trust each other as a group, so it's great.
Okay, you look very, friendly with each other, which is awesome. Okay, let's talk about Urban Rivers. So what is it? And then we'll get to the Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, so Urban Rivers is putting floating wetlands in the Chicago River and floating gardens. Basically, we see cities to have a lot of seawalls and a lot of edges that have no habitat on them. And so we want to put in these floating wetlands to kind of rehabilitate habitat, let people enjoy it, and really change how we use our rivers in urban areas.
And is that happening in other cities? Where did this come from? How did this idea come up?
Well, it started with one of our team members had a research project in the river through his university, University of Illinois. But there's LA's doing the LA River Project. There's a project in Germany called the Flussbad where they're turning one of the areas into a swimming pool for other citizens. So there are a lot of cities that are looking at these waterways it doesn't have to be an empty basin of no habitat. It could be a place of art and beautification and, flowers and other habitat. So
Zach and Nick, what's your background? I mean, how did you get involved with this?
Well, I was transitioning out of my first business, which was food distribution, and I met Nick. We were working on hydroponics, trying to do either growing food on rooftops and in the river. And then we met Josh off that, kind of throwing ideas at the dartboard. And we turned into a nonprofit called Urban Rivers.
And Josh Ellis is the individual who started the study with U of I to kind of see how these floating wetlands would affect habitat in the Chicago River.
So tell me where it's going to be. And also, I'm curious, so what's the benefit of it other than, you know, it potentially looking nice?
Yeah, so it's in the Chicago River on the east side of Goose Island. So right off of North Avenue where the Whole Foods is. If you walk to the river walk there, look over the edge, you can see our test unit, which has been in there for about 3 years now. So the benefit of it is, it creates habitat for all sorts of different animals. So when you have these floating wetlands that are sitting against the seawall, they create a garden that then fish come under. They eat the roots. They breed under the roots. Birds come, eat the insects around there, and it kind of catalyzes the habitat to come back to the
sea. That is so cool. And are people going to be able to access it or see it? I mean, when you said you can walk over and take a look, how many people really do go back there?
So we see quite a few people always eating back there and walking through, but one of the major pain points in the Chicago River is access. So what our project will help do is drive people to have a destination in the river. You know, before when our rivers were created or when they were manufactured, they were made to be for shipping. So, you know, our cities designed it around moving goods and stuff like that. But since the turn of the century, that's been waning. And what we're trying to do is find a way to make the rivers different, make them useful again to the people.
Without just coloring them some holiday theme color. Yes.
Exactly. Right? You know, the Cubs only win the World Series once a century, so we can't depend on that for river entertainment.
So now you have a Kickstarter campaign, and for anybody who's been living under a rock, let's just say there's this thing called Kickstarter, right? You can go do it online. Kickstarter, is it .com or .org?
.com.
It's .com.
.com. Yeah. And there are campaigns to raise money for entrepreneurial projects, and people have amazing success on this because it's crowdsourced, so they can get small donations from lots of people. So where are you guys at? What are you trying to raise?
So you can go to saveurbanrivers.org. So we create like a custom place for you to go find our campaign. And our goal was 10,000. I believe we're over 20 now, so we've doubled in the first 2 weeks, and now it's the second week stretch, so hopefully we can exceed that and maybe close with 40.
That's incredible. So are you right now still fundraising?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but once you've closed on your goal, then you get the money.
We get the money. They take a small, like a kind of a commission, and then we continue on with we're also going after grants and corporate sponsorships that are coming in more and more these days, yeah.
Right. I'm always wondering, do you have to incentivize people? I mean, some Kickstarter campaigns I've supported, they'll try to give me something or make me feel like I'm going to be a part of it after I donated. Do we get anything? I mean, just have to ask the selfish question. What do I get? What is in it for me?
Yeah, so we have a couple different incentives. So we have basically we equate the money you donate to square footage on the river. So $50 gets 1 square foot and then so on.
Like really, like mine?
Yes.
That's
yours.
Cool.
So
it
equates what it costs for us, and we are able to then designate a certain area as your spot. And one of the things we do is we give a rock with your name or a phrase
That's
or
nice.
Someone whom you want to put on there, put it place on the raft.
Can I just say it's a great holiday gift? I'm not even joking. For the person who has everything, or if you just want to give something in somebody's name that's Chicago and nature and eco, this sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Right?
You know, we want it to be something that, you know, 10 years down the line, people can go and kayak out to or walk to and see this and be like, that's the square foot that I helped put in, and that's my rock right there.
And are you guys working on this 24/7? Is it one of those things?
Well, definitely the last, like, month has been a big sprint. The last 6 weeks really getting geared up for Kickstarter, but just grants are coming in. We all balance this as a side job, and we all have full-time jobs.
Oh, really? This is not your full-time job?
No. So we just continue to kind of push hard and have calls at 9 p.m. on, you know, during certain days. And now we're at the final stretch. So we get this, and then we have to install next spring. So that's the most exciting part.
And that's the timing of it, that if all goes well, the installation is next spring?
Well, we will be putting something in the river. We just don't know all the footage because, like, again, what we raise is based on the footage. But our permit is for 600 linear feet. On the river.
Okay. And at the end of the day, when people walk by it, is it going to be something that they can really appreciate, or do I have to be kind of like an environmental focused person to really get it?
You know, I think it's something for everybody to appreciate. We have this area that's so unique in the city, and what we're trying to do is drive appreciation towards it. Putting these things in, people will get to walk by, and they'll get it immediately. They'll look at this, they'll see fish jumping around, they'll see birds in the area, they'll see plants growing, and it'll become something where they'll be proud of and be proud of
Do you think schools are going to take advantage internship. It seems like an amazing opportunity for, like, classrooms.
Yeah, we actually have already, like, custom a curriculum that's based on the STEM protocol.
Nice.
So for 4th to 6th grade. So we actually have it built out, and we'll most likely do a pilot next summer.
Do you see how I'm coming up with all these ideas, and you guys are like, we're doing that. We're already doing that. Got it.
Well, it's been a long road. It's been good. Like 2-3 years, you know, we've been hacking at this. So we've tried to look at all the different angles.
Well, look, thank you guys so much. So Zachary, Nick, Urban Rivers. So you really want people to go to urbanrivers.org?
Urbanriv.org or saveurbanrivers.org.
Say that one more time.
Saveurbanrivers.org.
Or?
Urbanriv.org.
Got it.
So no one's the other name, so we can't purchase the domain.
Got it. Thank you guys so much. We will be back to the Wintrust Business Lunch after this break.